Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Our highest turnout elections always involved the presidential campaigns. Both Biden and Trump they sewed up enough delegates, both of them, to win their parties, you know, to become the presumptive nominees for their parties. 15-20% of the vote out there. I mean, it could be like that. You know, I don't think it's going to be a very high number.
Hi, everybody. I'm Fran Spielman. We have an election coming up on Tuesday, a primary election, and we're going to talk about it. With me are two of my favorite people to talk politics, political and state government and investigative reporter for our partners at WBEZ Radio, Dave McKinney, formerly of the Sun-Times, and Tina Svondelis, political reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Thanks for joining us, both of you. Welcome back.
Hey, Fran, it's a pleasure.
Before we dive into the primary races, Dave, I have to compliment you and John Seidel for that wonderful but infuriating story about convicted felon and former alderman Ed Burke retaining his law license. This is one of those only in Chicago stories. It reminds me of the Jack Nicholson playing the Joker line from Batman. This town needs an enema. How could someone convicted of all of these counts of racketeering and extortion retain his law license?
I don't know. I mean, you look at it like, are there any sort of practical effects of him having a law license when his law firm is folded up, basically? I mean, you know, we don't know the answer to that, I guess, but it's hard to picture him being in a prison library working on, you know, estate planning or something for somebody on the outside. But it is a very peculiar thing. And it, you know, you look at the people who have gone through the federal court system recently. I mean, Ann Promajori, the former CEO at ComEd, and Michael McLean, you know, the confidant of former House Speaker Michael Madigan, the ex-ComEd lobbyist, both of them lawyers, both of them after their guilty verdicts, it was not very much longer till they had their law licenses suspended. So it's a very unusual situation with Burke, and it's a head scratcher, complete head scratcher.
And how it happened is everybody was conflicted out, or what happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's seven justices on the state Supreme Court, and in order for the court to do anything, they have to have a concurrence of four of those justices. So we know at least four of them, and maybe more, cited conflicts of interest in not participating. And the problem is that our court system in Illinois is not very transparent on some things, and this is one of them. There are court rules that govern these conflicts of interest. They're all left up to the individual justice to determine if there's a conflict, and they do have the choice about saying publicly what that conflict is. But none of these justices and the court itself will say whether, you know, what exactly the conflict is here. And of course, you know, we know that four of the justices served alongside Burke's wife, Ann Burke, who at one point was Chief Justice on the Supreme Court. We also know that Ed Burke played for decades. He was the person whom aspiring judges had to kiss the ring. You know, he was the head
right.
of the
he was the head
slate
of judicial
process.
Slate making for the Democratic
Correct.
Party, and only lost it when Preckwinkle was running for mayor, Tony Preckwinkle, the Democratic Party chairman, and was under pressure to get rid of Burke, to try to wash her hands, which she never was able to do, of Ed Burke, because she had had a fundraiser at his house, and he had, unbeknownst to her, muscled a $10,000 contribution for her at that fundraiser from this Burger King guy who he muscled law business from. And the jury has since convicted convicted him of that. So it really is this tangled web that shows you why it was so outrageous for Burke to literally build the judicial system in Illinois with this unbelievable slate-making power that he had. Tina, what did you think when you saw Dave's story?
I was not surprised. I also am very confused as to why he would want to keep it. And also just the visual of his wife being in court every day for his trial, too, is just a constant, just a constant reminder of this situation and how it was indeed like a first in the world kind of situation that we have here to have a Supreme Court justice standing by her side of someone who's on the path to being convicted. Just an astounding case. And I think these stories, we got to keep telling these stories because, you know, people are getting away with things like this. Dave keeps writing about people keeping their pensions or how much pensions they're going to keep after being convicted. So this is like a more extensive landscape that we've landed in Chicago and Cook County. And I think people need to know about it.
The tolerance level for this kind of stuff in this town, in this state, is unbelievable. We've come to expect it. And we figure, well, if the trains run on time, if people are safe, then I don't mind a little corruption. But in fact, some of that stuff isn't happening either. So on to the election. What is the most important race in this election in each of your opinions? Dave, why don't you start?
Well, I mean, I haven't, I haven't looked as closely at it as some of the other races, but I think the Cook County State's Attorney's race is the most important because, anybody who has lived in Chicago for, well, any period of time, I mean, you know, crime has been a stubborn, recurring issue all over the city. And I think that, you know, here we have the CTU getting involved in this race. They're backing, they're involved in this. I think that the two candidates here offer a stark difference in, you know, you have on one side a law and order candidate, the other side a candidate that has, as I said, the backing of the CTU. And, you know, it just seems like it's the most pivotal race in the on the ballot for people this year. We'll see how it turns out.
The race for Cook County State's Attorney pits Clayton Harris, who once served, I believe, under former Governor Blagojevich and another convicted felon as state transportation director, against Illinois Appellate Court Judge Eileen O'Neill Burke. Tina, this is a race that voters do probably care about, considering the preoccupation that most people have with crime, with violent crime, with the burglaries and robberies and strong arm robberies that happen every single morning we wake up to things happening overnight. Kim Fox is leaving. She's the one who reduced the felony threshold for theft from $1,000 to $300. Only Burke plans to restore it to $1,000. But aside from that, what are the differences between these two? Tina.
I think people kind of see it as, do we want kind of a continuation of Kim Fox's policies or do we want something a little bit different? And I think that's what O'Neill Burke is trying to campaign on. She has lots of money. She has over $3 million in campaign fundraising. She's been using it. I've seen lots of ads and flyers attacking Harris. Harris is endorsed by the Cook County Democratic Party. So I see this as a big test of, can they elect another state's attorney? You have that in a couple other races on Tuesday as well. But, you know, the party is different. As we just talked about, the party has had to rebuild, even just the state party, Madigan, Burke, all these people who have been like integral parts of the Democratic Party in the state city are gone. And it is kind of a rebuilding process. So it'll be interesting to see whether the Democratic Party slating actually is as effective as it used to be.
And you wrote a fascinating story about the heavy hand of Toni Preckwinkle in this election. Why do you think she handpicked Clayton Harris? He's not exactly the most charismatic campaigner.
Well, from what I've learned, and I do believe this to be true, I don't think she's looking for a strict politician. I think that she kind of leads and chooses people who she believes would be good for the job. I do think that's true. Obviously, there's a political component as to, can we get enough people to support this person? Can we surround them with people who can help them win? But I do think her calculation is about lifting up diverse voices. And, you know, I think she believes these people are good.
Now, she was behind Kim Fox also, and that didn't go too well, Dave. Under fire, you know, Jussie Smollett, on and on, some of these ethics questions, an exodus from the office, people blame her for crime, she fights back, she's defiantly leaving, but, you know, it didn't go well the first time Tony Preckwinkle made a pick for state's attorney.
No, and again, I think the point you made, kind of introducing this piece of your show, like, you know, people all across the city, you know, when you wake up your car's been broken into on the street, or you're walking to the store and you're getting held up. I mean, that kind of thing is happening with great frequency. And it seems like there's not as much of a deterrent happening across the city as a lot of people would like. And so, you know, that gets to the very heart of some of the policies that Fox presided over in her office, that, you know, feeling among some of her critics that she wasn't tough enough on criminals.
And she did exonerate a lot of people who were wrongfully convicted, and she did preside over the decriminalization of and dropping charges against people who were charged with marijuana offenses. So she's proud of all that. She was part of a wave of reformer state's attorneys. But as far as the meat and potatoes issue of violent crime, people do blame her as she leaves. Which one of these two candidates is going to be tougher on crime in this election?
I think it's a matter of different policies. Like, as you described Kim Fox and what she's done, she's a super progressive. And so she would say she's proud of all those things that she's done, and that she believes that these are things that have been done for decades to help black and brown people. And so I would say she would say, yes, this is how it has to be. This is reform is hard. And so I think Clinton would probably try to continue some of those policies. I'm not sure if he would be just as progressive as she is with some of those, with some of the lesser crimes. But that's the test, is do people want kind of a little bit of a continuance of a progressive voice, or do they want someone who claims that they'll be tougher on things like that, retail theft and all the things that we've seen in the past couple of years?
Do you see Clayton Harris, Dave, as a continuation of Kim Fox?
Well, I mean, potentially, but he's a bit of a blank slate because, you know, I know in his background, he touts himself as a former prosecutor, but he's sort of, there's just not a long, extensive record there to look at. You know, Burke, for example, I mean, she's been in the court system for a long time. She was a prosecutor. So, I mean, there is a track record there that people can judge. I just think with Harris, it's just a bit of an unknown about where he's at on several issues. But again, with the backing that he has, the organizational backing he has in what could be a very low turnout election, that could be pivotal.
Yeah,
that's the thing, Fran, is like they have to highlight their differences, and that's their job. And so I think it's difficult to get people interested. They have to kind of really go into the weeds to say, how would Clayton Harris handle retail theft and downtown crime? So that's going to be a test on Tuesday.
The low turnout is certain, I believe, to benefit Bring Chicago Home. That is Mayor Brandon Johnson's proposal to quadruple the real estate transfer tax on property transactions over $1.5 million, triple them on transaction on the portion of it over $1 million, and slightly lower it on sales under $1 million. I believe this thing will pass, even though there has been a court battle that will resume after the election. How do you see it? This is all to create $100 million a year to combat homelessness. How do you see this playing out, Dave?
Well, I think you've handicapped it perfectly. I just think that, you know, when you have these low turnout elections, it's always about just, you know, a very small core group of people influencing the outcomes of these elections. And I think that here, the backers of this probably hold the upper hand. I mean, Johnson backing with the CTU, it's a powerful organizational force at his back. And I think that, you know, you just can't ignore that. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, people, voters over history have sort of loved the idea of tax the rich. And it doesn't typically fail at the ballot box. You know, we've seen at the state level, I don't know, it's probably been 10 or 15 years ago, you know, there was an amendment an advisory referendum. It had no teeth to it, but it was a precursor to the graduated income tax proposal that failed. But it was a thing that, you know, let's tax the millionaires higher. And so this is just another outgrowth of that. And it's a wedge issue that I think people glom onto. And you know, I think it's got a pretty strong chance of passing.
Yeah. And the person who is the architect of the field effort is Emma Tai from United Working Families. She marshaled the whole vote and the get out the vote for Brandon Johnson. So she has proven her ability to pinpoint her voters, get them to the polls in a low turnout election. Tina, do you see any chance that this doesn't pass?
I do think it's possible that people might be really confused about all of the court decisions, the appellate court decision, the Supreme Court overturning it, saying that it was always on the ballot, but in a couple of days, it wasn't going to be counted. I think that's very confusing. And we do have a trust issue in politics right now and on ballots, and we see that across the nation. And so I do think that component may affect it, just because people might not trust, like, what is this? I've been reading stories about the controversy of whether my vote should be counted. So maybe people will not vote on that because of that.
Been told also that no matter what happens, this will be appealed and it will be thrown out in the way they did it, not the motivation behind it, because it's a noble cause for homelessness, but it's the way it was done. You cannot couple a sugar cube in a small tax decrease for some people with a major increase for other people.
Well, yes, I do think people will be fighting that this could drag on. But as you know, as someone who covers city finances, it seems pretty vague that this money would go directly for that. And I think there's some distrust with that as well, that they would approve this, they would get this $100 million. And then, you know, there's a lot of plugs in a lot of holes in the city budget. Like, can they use it for other things? So those are some of the questions that I guess the opponents of it are posing.
Right. The congressional races, Dave, we have Garcia, Chuy Garcia, who ran for mayor twice and fell short, versus Ray Lopez, Alderman Ray Lopez, who also ran for mayor and then dropped out. He's called, among some of his colleagues, derisively Chopez, because he's kind of a publicity hound, very quotable guy, very much a headline grabber. Opposed Lori Lightfoot, opposes Brandon Johnson. Does Lopez have a chance, Dave?
Well, I mean, Garcia has the advantage of incumbency, and you would always sort of think that in a race like this, absent major scandal or criminal charges against somebody, the needle would tilt toward the incumbent. I mean, Lopez better than I do, but I mean, Garcia has, he's assembled a record that I think carries appeal to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. I mean, he's in the past been aligned with Bernie Sanders, you know, and it just seems like he's this is a very localized turf battle between two people who don't probably care much for each other. And I think it is one of among a handful of these congressional races that are, you know, definitely worth watching on election day.
Lopez is more conservative. He's kind of a fixture on Fox News. He is anti-migrant to an extent, a lot more so than not anti-migrant, but controls, even though he offered up a park district facility in his ward to house migrants. He wanted to put that resolution on the ballot, the advisory referendum about whether Chicago should remain a sanctuary city. Tina, do you think he has a shot?
I think, just as Dave said, there has not been a lot of drama. As you know, Representative Garcia, he's kind of quiet, kind of under the radar, does his work, has not been embroiled in a lot of scandals since he took office. So it's just a matter of, do people want to see change? So I'm not sure. And I'm not sure how many people are upset with the migrant situation in that district, if that will play a role. If so, that would probably help. That would probably help him.
Mike Bost versus Darren Bailey. Dave, you know about this one. That's downstate. Yeah. What's happening down there, and where's Trump and where's everybody in this?
Okay, this is a fun one. So it's Representative Mike Bost and former gubernatorial candidate Darren Bailey. Both Dave and I have covered Darren Bailey extensively when he ran against J.B. Pritzker and lost. So both of them were endorsed by President Trump in their last runs. Trump did endorse Mike Bost a couple of weeks ago in this race, which I think was pretty bad for Bailey's that he was counting on it. He was going to Mar-a-Lago. He, you know, includes pictures of him and Trump in his fundraising. He is a super, super Trumper, and he wanted that endorsement. But it's clear that Trump has been endorsing incumbents. And as we saw 2 years ago, Trump likes to endorse people who he thinks are going to win. So I think that was not very good for Bailey. And Bost has had a fundraising advantage the entire time. He raised over $2 million. I know Bailey raised about close to $500,000. So, you know, you need money to run ads. And so Bost has had that advantage so far.
And how do you see it, Dave?
Yeah, I think for Bailey, again, he's going up against an established incumbent. All of Southern Illinois knows who Mike Bost is. They've tracked his career from, you know, when he was kind of this firebrand conservative in the General Assembly in Springfield to moving into Congress and, you know, carrying on some of the same, you know, same philosophies there. I think he's definitely got the upper hand here. And with the Trump endorsement, it matters a great deal. I know a lot of people regard this as sort of the marquee matchup among all the congressional races, primaries we're seeing. But I think, you know, Darren Bailey, he's entered this race, I think, kind of with the stigma. He's entering it as a losing candidate. And it's always hard for people to bounce back from, you know, a pretty, you know, again, it was statewide that Bailey lost to J.B. Pritzker, but it wasn't a close election. And
he was walloped.
I think people completely. And there were, you know, certainly, you know, you're factoring in Chicago and the collar counties that aren't participating in this race. But again, it's just, you know, he kind of wears that collar of a losing candidate from that past election. And it's difficult, you know, to persuade voters, donors, the political establishment that you're the real deal. And, you know, for Bailey, I think it's a make or break time for him politically, because if he loses this race, there's not a whole lot of places for him, if he wants to stay in politics, for him to go. And so, you know, we may see the end of Darren Bailey's political career here if he loses.
And then we have Danny Davis, 82 years old, a 14-term incumbent, in a rematch against Keena Collins and a new candidate named City Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin, who has some ethical clouds over her, but she is the wife of Budget Chairman Jason Irvin. How do you see this race, Tina?
I think it'll be close, but it's funny. I take the Eisenhower sometimes to get home. And on the west side, Danny Davis's signs, they say, you know him. And that made me laugh. But it's true. Like, that's what he's running on. He's like, you know me. Like, I've been running for how many years? I'm 82. So that's his campaign slogan of, if you want, you know who I am, you can trust me because I've been in office for a long time. Or do you want a more progressive voice? I do think Keena Collins, last time around, she lost by just under 5,000 votes. I know that seems like a lot in a primary, but you know, she was the closest challenger. And so she's trying again. She does have young activists, the young progressives supporting her. She just had a cool band in town, the Strokes, to lead a fundraiser last week. So she's got that. She's got some of that momentum. So I think it'll be interesting to see Davis, Keena, and Melissa. There's also two other people running, Nikhil Bhatia, who's a teacher and principal, and then Corey Marshall, who worked for J.B. Pritzker. So it's a crowded field in that race.
the Melissa Conyers Irvin ethical cloud, it has to do with her allegedly using people on her staff to do personal errands and then muscling or trying to pressure a bank that she does business with as city treasurer to do a lease for her husband's office. You know, typical Chicago thing. Is that going to play a role, Dave, do you think?
Well, I mean, it gives Davis's people fodder to go after her. But you know, it's like it's just sort of like races like this that involve long established incumbents and then a wide open field of opponents. You know, if there is a block of people in that congressional district in the 7th that don't like Danny Davis, well, they're going to be carved up by the just the sheer number of candidates here. So again, you would have to sort of look at this and I think favor Davis in this race, just because he's the established name. He's, you know, like Garcia, he hasn't gotten himself into any sort of major trouble along the way.
He has seniority in a place that where everything is based on seniority, the U.S. House, right?
Correct. Right. And, you know, I mean, and a relationship with President Biden. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it seems like if you're going to take on somebody like this, you know, I think back to like a, you know, a Rostenkowski type figure, you know, there has to be a reason.
Yeah.
You have to have a reason. I mean, the guy was politically wounded and vulnerable. And, you know, absent that, then it's just a really, it's an uphill struggle for people who are, you know, wanting to get to that next rung in the political ladder to get there, because you just, you know, there's just, it's hard to attack people that haven't gotten themselves into trouble.
Yeah. And then we have Circuit Court Clerk Iris Martinez versus Marianne Spiropoulos. How do you see that race, Tina?
I think that's going to be one to watch to see whether the Democratic Party endorsement is helping. They endorsed Mariana over Iris Martinez. Preckwinkle and the party are still mad at her. They did not endorse her 2 years ago.
Why?
They are mad at her because, well, she won. They did not endorse her last time and she won. So their party back candidate already lost once. And she also endorsed other candidates that they had not endorsed. So she's going against the grain, and she says that she's doing it to help support the Latino community. That's why she wants to continue her work, and that's why she's backed those candidates. And so they have backed Mariana Spiropoulos, so that means money, ads, foot soldiers, all that. So that is it'll be a test to see whether that made a difference.
Iris Martinez, I think, has Lori Lightfoot in her corner. Who else does she have, Dave?
You know what? I have to confess, this is far enough down the rung here. I haven't paid super close attention to this race, so I'm probably not your best resource on this one.
Is Lori Lightfoot behind Iris Martinez, Tina?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I've been in congressional land.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And now we have, of course, the Trump versus Biden, and the fact that J.B. Pritzker is playing a kind of a surrogate role, a very important surrogate role, and a fundraising role with a PAC that he formed on abortion and so on, as a surrogate all over the country for Joe Biden. What's he up to? This is his laying the groundwork for his presidential race at some point next time, right? Or if Biden were to suddenly drop out, which nobody expects he will. Tina, what do you think J.B. Pritzker is really motivated by here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that abortion group, there are other governors, Gavin Newsom, there are a bunch of governors who do want to run at some point for president, and they're kind of building up that infrastructure. I do think that's part of this. I think he would be ready to go if something were to happen to Joe Biden or some sort of scandal happened this year, which I kind of find to be unlikely. I think he would be ready to go. But this does give him that exposure in other states, in other Midwestern states, in other purple states. That's what he's been doing. But he's also close to Biden. That's what you got to do. You got to keep those people who are going to run against you close to them. And Joe Biden has done that. You know, he appointed Pete Buttigieg to be Secretary of Transportation. He does keep those mayors and governors who want a political future kind of close to him. which I think they're, you know, he considers them to be good politicians, but also probably for that reason, to keep close to his future competitors, or in this case, we'll see what happens this year. So, I do believe that Pritzker is kind of building up the infrastructure for a potential run.
And he's also running an ad, or there's an ad that's being run for J.B. Pritzker as if he is on the ballot this time. Dave, does that surprise you?
Well, I mean, he has ample resources, our billionaire governor. And so that I sort of scratched my head a little bit, too, because it's like, to what end here are we? What is this trying to accomplish? Because, you know, he didn't face any real opposition, as we mentioned before, with Darren Bailey. The Republican Party at this stage hasn't really put forth any kind of viable Republican candidate for governor in the next cycle if Pritzker opts instead to stay in Springfield. So I don't really, other than just sort of keeping his name out there in front of people, I don't fully understand the strategy that they're employing there in doing that, because it's just, you know, in Illinois, Pritzker is probably the best known politician, and it's not as if he's struggling to elevate name recognition.
Fran, yeah. I think it's about approval ratings. I think he wants to keep that number really high this year for whatever will happen for Illinois, for Chicago, for the DNC, for if he does jump in. He wants to say, you know, I got these people on board. I think that's what he's doing.
State Supreme Court, who's running there?
Dave? Well, I mean, it's appointed Justice Joy Cunningham. She took over. I mean, this is the seat that Ann Burke once held. And when Burke resigned in late 2022, she arranged for the appointment of Joy Cunningham.
And now Chicago, of course.
Yes, it's correct. And it's one of three seats that Cook County has on the Supreme Court, and she is up against State Appellate Justice Jesse Reyes. And, you know, most of the major union support has tilted toward Cunningham, though Reyes has some of, some backing as well. I think Cunningham is back in that Burke story, we were trying to pin her down on whether she was one of the justices who recused herself, and if so, why? And, the campaign has just kind of been running this, they're not putting her out there really too much where people could ask questions or really see her very much. So, it's a very kind of conservative campaign that she's running, low risk campaign. So and Reyes, Reyes has backing from Chuy Garcia and some of the progressive, Latino wing of the party. He'd be the first Latino justice, and that, he regards himself as a bit of a groundbreaker that way, if would be if elected. It's a low profile but very important race. Our Supreme Court really matters here. People tend not to pay very close attention to that place, but it's important.
And Cunningham would have the edge. And finally, in the General Assembly, that one race that is getting all the TV time is the one where Chris Welch, the House Speaker, is targeting Mary Flowers. Why is he targeting her, Tina?
Well, Welch claims that Dave and I have covered Mary Flowers for many years. She's kind of a firecracker on the floor, behind scenes in caucus meetings. Doesn't always go along with how they want her to vote. And so there's a calculated effort to oust her, and it's unions and Welch. Before it was just unions at first. And then Welch actively got his top Democrats to support her challenger, Michael Crawford. I've been watching the ads too. There's one about she's saying she's ineffective and 38 years is enough. It's got like a video of Michael Jackson on there from my childhood. So it's just showing, we need someone new. It will be really interesting if she wins. And it's very possible, as you said, low voter turnout and people know who she is. And then they'll be sending someone back who's fighting with the entire caucus. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic.
What's the turnout going to be quickly before we go? Dave, what do you think?
Oh boy, I don't know. I mean, the turnout is driven. Our highest turnout elections always involve the presidential campaigns, and in this situation, since we already have primaries that are meaningless. I mean, both Biden and Trump they sewed up enough delegates, both of them, to win their parties, to become the presumptive nominees for their parties. I just don't think that there's going to be a high level of interest. I mean, if you get 15-20% of the vote out there, I mean, it could be like that. I don't think it's going to be a very high number.
Tina?
I'm aiming for a little over 20 to 30. It's not very optimistic, but we'll see.
That's pretty awful, isn't it? Forefathers, I know it sounds old fashioned, but our forefathers fought for the right to vote.
Absolutely.
And people for women. Just throw it away. They throw it away. Yes. And the female vote, people suffered and died for that for decades. And yet people are willing to just throw away their franchise. It's a shame. Anyway, get to the polls if you can, please. And we will talk to you after the election and see how wrong or right we were. And we'll see you all next week.